Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for taking time to join us this afternoon for the Republican Agriculture Commissioners Committee media call on discussing federal overreach and its impact on U.S. agriculture. We have Commissioners Mike Strain, Mike Strain from Louisiana, Doug Goring from North Dakota, Hugh Weathers from South Carolina, and Secretary Bill Northey from Iowa joining us on the call this morning, or on the call this afternoon. We've got some good ground to cover as we talk about the changing face of agriculture here in the U.S. and all the challenges that abound there. So with that, I will turn it over to Commissioner Mike Strain from the state of Louisiana. Commissioner.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon. And first of all, thank all of you for joining on this call. There's some very, very important topics that we would like to talk about. You know, as Ag Commissioner, Secretaries, and Directors, you know, we focus on, you know, feeding America and feeding the world and all of the different policies that affect that. The Republican Ag Commissioners Committee is the largest caucus of Republican state agriculture commissioners in the country. Our mission is to elect Republicans to the office of state agriculture commissioner and to actively support the appointed Republican colleagues. The RAC supports elected candidates for agriculture commissioner using strong financial support, high-quality research, and strong messaging. We also serve as a forum for the best exchange of best practices amongst the elected and appointed state agriculture commissioners, industry associations, academias, and individuals. So when you start looking at this, we have 11 of the 12 elected agricultural commissioners in the United States are members, and 17 appointed commissioners, giving us 28 members. And so when you start looking at the purpose of the RAC, and it's that not only is it a political organization, but it's primarily policy, driving public policy. And we're looking at many of the different issues of today. And when you start looking at what we're dealing with, it's through the RAC we're able to apply conservative and free market principles to solve problems and implement reform policies that serve as models for other ag commissioners across the country. And that's why we're so very, very diligent and working through a number of our subcommittees and also working for food security and national security. When you look at where we're at in agriculture, the United States has never seen such a renaissance and abundance in production. If you look just at the figures coming out today, record agricultural production, 171.7 bushels an acre of corn, the largest corn crop in over 81 million acres. Record production, you know, in soybeans, record production, you know, in our crops. When you look at the overall value of American agriculture, it's going to be over $390 billion. But a big part of that, too, is that one in every 3 acres is exported, which brings in hard currency into the United States, over $160 billion of exports, a $54 billion positive balance of trade. We've had a positive balance of trade for over 50 years. When you look at the importance of agriculture and forestry and aquaculture and all the many things that we deal with and regulate, is the fact that this is where we have the original dollars. We drive the economy. But also looking where we've been and where we are going and the challenges that we face collectively, we know that every day there's going to be another 250,000 souls on this earth, that in the next 35 years, there's going to be between 9 and 9.2 billion people, that we have to increase food production 50% by 2035 and double it by 2050. We have to do that with only another 14% land available worldwide. Currently, we utilize 70% of the world's fresh water, and 80% of that is in agriculture. And the challenge is how we here in the United States not only double food production, but we have to triple it to meet the growing world demand. Our mission every day when we wake up is to be able to stay ahead of the curve to make sure that the food and the fiber and the energy is going to be available tomorrow. And that is it's a very complex ecosystem. At the same time, we're under increasing federal jurisdiction that if we are not careful, will restrict and slow down the growth in production. The current rate of agricultural growth, we've doubled food production since 1980. However, the current rate in growth and the production of agricultural products will not meet the demand that will be here by 2050. It must accelerate using all available technologies, all available resources, and has to be done on a day-to-day basis. Every year that we do not do what we do properly, we fall further behind. And some of the issues that we have, and we're going to talk about those, and specifically on the issue of federal overreach. You know, under the United States Constitution, the federal government is allowed to step into our states when there is a just and necessary reason. However, in general, the preeminence for dealing with most issues is remanded to the states. And when you start looking at where we're at with some of the issues we're going to talk about today, is how if we have undue burdens by the federal government, we will not be able to keep on pace, on track, on target, and remain profitability for America. And I will give you a for instance. You know, when the Secretary of Agriculture was asked what's the most important component of the Farm Bill, he said it's very, very simple. It is conservation. Without proper conservation and the ability, we lose our ability of the land to produce. We lose the ability of our land to produce. We lose our farms. We lose our farms. We lose national security. We lose food security. And these things we must work hard to make sure that we can do what we need to do. And we believe that it is best served from the ground up. You know, many of the laws in Congress, especially like the Clean Water Act and others, specifically state that the primary jurisdiction is within the states themselves. That's a general overview, and we will be moving next to Commissioner Doug Goring. He's going to talk about general federal overreach. Doug?
Thank you, Commissioner Strain. There has been a great deal of federal regulations that have come down the pipeline in the last 4, 5, 6 years. Agriculture, our farmers and ranchers are exasperated. They're exhausted. Sometimes they don't even know what to do and how to push back anymore. They continue to go to their trade associations. One thing we've determined and decided to do in North Dakota was let's step up and create a regulatory review committee to start to look at all these different things, whether we're talking about the waters of the U.S., Clean Air Act, worker protection standards, water quality, climate change legislation or policies, issues that are coming down the pipeline that affect us dearly. Part of what we did in this respect is start to put together a pretty good cross-section of the ag community, not just farmers and ranchers and trade associations, but also our ag service associations, those that are providing crop protection products, those that are involved in helping to monitor, provide technology, applicators, everybody that plays a role in providing food, feed, fiber, and fuel to this nation and to our state. The other thing that's recognized in our state is agriculture supports almost 25% of all the jobs. And when you look across nationally, if you look at some numbers that came, I know about a decade ago from American Farm Bureau, they had cited almost 19% of the nation's population derived some percentage of their salary, their income, from agriculture. We drive an economy. Not only before it comes to the farm gate with respect to manufactured goods, equipment, supplies, parts, other services and goods, but after it leaves the farm gate, it goes to processing facilities, transportation systems. It goes into the system where we start to export. This country is known for the fact that we produce far more than we can consume. 96% of our customers globally exist outside of our border. 80% of the buying power exists outside of our border, and 92% of all the middle class growth in the next 40 years is going to take place outside of our border. Our customers are out there. We need to be out there. We need to be engaged. And when you have regulations that are designed to, as some would say, benefit us, the reality is we're being regulated to death. When we have over 4,500 new regulations that have come through different agencies at the federal level, such as Department of Interior, Department of Education, EPA, FDA, USDA, you've got to wonder, what are they being designed for? We have a great system in place. Our concerns most recently with waters of the U.S. is a great illustration. When you see words like significant nexus and connectivity, and all of a sudden we're being told, no, this is to clarify. The reality is, folks, when they start talking about these types of rules and regulations being designed, they will regulate and have oversight on every drop of water above ground. But get this, even below ground, because they also talk about subsurface water, and the first thing they said is we're not here to regulate groundwater. The reality is they didn't define subsurface water either. It also opens us up to exposure from activist groups that can come along and define in their own terms and in their own words what they believe the waters of the U.S. should be and how it should be regulated, how it should be implemented. And the reality is it'll come down to sue and settle, and it'll be more restrictive on our farmers and ranchers in this nation. It will hurt, and we will start to affect not only our farmers and ranchers, we will affect the rest of the economy, we will affect the rest of this nation when we do such a good job at energy security and food security. There are too many unrealistic expectations put upon agriculture, and there's no sound science being used when we're being asked to do certain things or even understand the unintended consequences that go along with that. I think we have some daunting challenges ahead of us, but united, I believe we can overcome, adapt, and improvise. We've always done that. Agriculture, our farmers and ranchers have always been good about adapting, overcoming, and improvising. But the reality is we need to do it together.
Thank you. I'm going to start off and talk a little bit about the waters of the U.S., and Secretary Northey is going to join me. I'm a veterinarian, rural practitioner, a farmer, a rancher, and also now in Louisiana, a master farmer. The waters of the U.S. is one of the most significant outreaches or overreaches of the federal government in recent history. When you look, 1972, when the Clean Water Act was formulated, it was under the jurisdiction of navigable bodies of water of the U.S. Those bodies of water with multi-state jurisdiction for which there was authority. Unto that then was added wetlands that are adjacent to navigable bodies of water. If you look at the waters of the U.S., the rule and the interpretive rule that accompanies it, now that is being extended to tributaries, it's being extended to riparian areas that may or do at some point drain into a tributary. Any type of entity that has a bank and a bed that could drain into a tributary or riparian area, any body of water that is separated by a man-made entity from a body of water of the U.S. is now considered under jurisdiction of the EPA, and then anything draining into it. So the bottom line, if you look at the state of Louisiana, that's pretty much everything, including the concrete on the top of the Capitol. And so when you start looking at this, this is a very significant increase in jurisdictional authority by the Environmental Protection Agency that, in my opinion and the opinion of many in Congress and the United States Senate, that was never authorized by congressional action. Furthermore, when you look at the Clean Water Act specifically says that the federal government is to work hand-in-hand with the state governments in dealing with the issues of clean water. When you start looking at clean water and whether or not you have to get a Section 404 permit is determined whether or not you have pollution or if you have dredge and fill going into that. With that being said, we held hearings across our state, and there's been hearings in other states. Our farmers, ranchers, foresters, our aquaculturists are very, very concerned because, again, this markedly increases federal jurisdiction on lands and areas for which they have not had previous jurisdiction. And the other part is under the interpretive rule, the new interpretive rule, which defines only a portion of those normal and customary conservation practices that will be grandfathered in. Practices outside of that, which are considered normal farming practices that are not grandfathered in, a farmer would have to get a Section 404 permit from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to institute conservation practices on their farms. With that being said, as we talked about earlier, we are in a great race to adapt and develop new and innovative technologies to advance the productivity and the efficiency of food production. in our states and in working with the states up and down the entire Mississippi River Valley, we have developed a nutrient management strategy and nutrient management initiative in our state and in other states. We've developed master farmer programs that where you are certified by education components, and also developing total nutrient management system plans for all of your farms, that we are basically showing that our farmers and by these programs can become the best of the best in nutrient management and in dealing with the issues of decreasing runoff, reutilizing runoff, also in becoming increased profitability, productivity, and greater sustainability. We believe that these issues are best at the state level, and that, you know, our goals is to adapt and to move forward rapidly and to adapt to an ever-changing marketplace. But when you start looking at where the federal government comes in and now regulates this at the in the speed of regulation and the speed of trying to adapt to change by the federal government is basically unacceptable to the mission that we have to continue to produce. So we have asked, and we have some strong language, and that actually by an action item by Commissioner Goring, who is sitting here, we put forth an action item through the National Association of the States Department of Agriculture, urging the EPA and the U.S. Army engineers to withdraw proposed waters of the U.S. rule under the Clean Water Act. That was adopted, and that is now our policy. I also testified on August the 15th at a field hearing at the State Supreme Court House before Senator David Vitter and Representative Bill Cassidy and others at a committee hearing on the issues involved in the interpretive rule in the waters of the U.S. With that, Secretary Norley, would you like to add in?
Sure, Commissioner. Thank you. This is Bill Norley from Iowa. Appreciate everybody being on the call and your interest. I think you heard it laid out. You certainly heard some of the conversations. The meeting that we just had at NASA, National Association of State Departments of Ag meeting, we spent a lot of time talking about the waters of the U.S. We also talked about whether it could be fixed or whether it should be withdrawn. Universally ended up with the belief it should be withdrawn. It is a real problem. It's too much to fix in it to trust that the process is at that point where things will be fixed. EPA has said they brought forward the rules to clear up the confusion, certainly minimum that dramatically added to the confusion. There's a real frustration of many in the countryside when there were questions or concerns raised. It appeared that EPA dismissed those concerns, which added to the feeling that this rule could be fixed, at least with current understanding or appreciation by EPA, that it needed to be dropped, needed to be withdrawn, started over. Some of the things that were mentioned that are new language added to this, from our perspective, are brand new reaches up the watershed. Are those all tributaries being added, watershed, waters adjacent to existing waters of the U.S., which can include subsurface connections, and then significant nexus, meaning that there's some significant interaction with existing waters of the U.S. or their description of waters of the U.S. without the full description. And as those concerns are raised, again, they have been generally dismissed by EPA under the guise that this rule doesn't change anything. So if it doesn't change anything, then it's a great chance to be able to rewrite, to start over on this rule and make sure that everybody agrees with that at the end. I think you heard the objections of what the cost could be to a rule like this, what the uncertainty. Let me talk about as well, we see a cost to our water quality efforts right here in Iowa. Other states reiterated the same thing. We have started forward that nutrient reduction strategy in Iowa, like Louisiana has. Many of the states within the Mississippi River Basin, we have significant dollars for state legislature to invest in a science-based voluntary effort to engage our producers. We talk about engaging producers. We'll pay a portion of the cost of putting cover crops off the land, or a portion of what it would take to convert to no-till or strip-till or other water-friendly practices. Engaging them, engaging the agribusiness community to help us better manage our accuracy, how we control erosion, to create both in-field and edge-of-field practices, and the destruction that the waters of the U.S. rule is very real. We have efforts in Iowa right now to gather comments for the comment period that ends in several weeks here. Normally these folks have been out there promoting water quality after the engaging producers. Instead, they certainly feel like, at least for the short term, that they need to be engaged in letting EPA know what the impact would be on farmers. So instead of information table tents on elevators, counters in Iowa talking about cover crops, we have those table tents on those counters talking about how you get your competence again. And then that uncertainty causes farmers to wonder if engagement's worth it, if there's an pending other shoe to drop on this as EPA decides not only they have authority up those watersheds, but maybe they want to exercise that authority. They've indicated that some of the language so far, they don't want to exercise that authority right away. But once that authority's there, there's certainly an expectation of it's there for a reason, and that causes folks to hesitate exactly when we don't want to hesitate. So I think there's a lot of risk. I think the rule sets a dangerous precedent, but I think it undermines the water quality efforts that we have going where we engage agriculture, the agribusiness community, those of us that work with agriculture as government entities in a way where we're seeing real progress. We've got a long ways to go. Nobody says we're done. This is not about wanting to back away from the challenge of water quality. This is about engaging. And we think that this actually undermines that engagement, which I believe is the best strategy to fixing the water quality challenges that we have, creating the technologies that help our farmers being able to fix those as well. We've engaged with the non-point, or we've engaged the non-point community, with the point source community, the urban, with the agricultural community. And again, issues like this tend to divide and create fissures between some of those communities. So certainly it's a big issue, and that's why universally, Dennis said last week, that we want the rule to grow, that it's time to start over, and should start over with a much more inclusive conversation out there. Some of these problems could have easily been avoided if EPA had included the agricultural discussion before they got forward. So thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you very, very much. All right, next, Commissioner Hugh Weathers. On federal overreach, Commissioner?
Thank you, Commissioner Strain. And as he said, I'm Hugh Weathers, Commissioner in South Carolina. Let me tell you a few of the hats that I wear, and I will tell you how each of them are impacted by the Food Safety Modernization Act that was passed 3 years ago and is still in the regulation promulgation stage. But my family has been in the farming business for four generations on the farm where I live, in the milk business, 30 years as a milk deliverer for other dairies in my part of the state, 15 years serving on a farm credit bank board, lending dollars to farmers all across the state of South Carolina and Georgia, 10 years as Commissioner of Agriculture for South Carolina, with the hats that involves regulatory, promotion, economic development. All of these are impacted by the regulations that we're going to see that the farmers are going to face. Prior to Congress becoming and reaching the levels of dysfunction that it seems to have lately In 2011, the Food Safety Modernization Act was passed. It was really the first major, major revision of food safety laws in 70 years. Not a revision of the food safety techniques and technologies that we've used on farms year after year to give Americans the safest food, most economical food anywhere in the world. But nevertheless, as dysfunctional as Congress has become, some of our regulatory arms seem to have been empowered to a higher functional level, and that's the case with the Food Safety Modernization Act. We are in the process of working toward 7 rules that they have proposed, and when I say we, I'm speaking on behalf of all commissioners of agriculture, as has been pointed out just last week at our meeting in Vermont, where the Food Safety Modernization Act was a primary conversation and discussion. At that meeting, Deputy Secretary Mike Taylor came and said there would be a new spirit of cooperation and not just enforcement on behalf of FDA. Well, let me say that no one from FDA came to just say we've had a revelation, we've had an epiphany, and all of a sudden we're going to be more cooperative. It has been the State Departments of Agriculture who have demanded that when the regulations hit the farm level, that we are the ones who will have the most impact on bringing about these changes, these costly changes. As diversified as our 50 states are, from South Carolina to South Dakota, we know that the farmers across this country have got to have consistency in regulations. It's the same principle as we've discussed with you before on the GMO labeling. There needs to be consistency there. Farmers have got to hear what is in store for them, how it impacts their operations. I'll give you examples later. But we have a saying in South Carolina, in order to be heard, you have to be believed. And I know that the farmers who surround my hometown, and I come from a town with more cows than people, so you can understand the farming fabric that is here. So in order for us to be heard, our farmers have to believe us, and it is our, we feel it in the bottom of our hearts that it is the State Departments of Agriculture who are believed, because we're there with them. They understand. We believe in education first and then regulation. I find that to be just the opposite from what seems to come from Washington. And I'd say, give several examples, both within my dairy farm sector. In South Carolina, a small dairy farm two and a half years ago, before any of these regulations took place, a simple process of sampling and they by the FDA of their products that they processed out on the shelves, basically found to be guilty until proven innocent prior to all of the due diligence that was required. And my point is, as my regulators from my department of North Carolina, Georgia, are out there on the farms, we're going to take just the opposite approach. Do the homework to know what is the situation at hand. Another dairy farm in another part of the state told by FDA you cannot abide by state regulations that allow you to sell raw milk in the capacities that our state laws allow, whereas our neighboring states may not. Nevertheless, state rights out the window, FDA comes in, and that farm was discontinued from what it was doing. The good news on the regulatory environment that's going to come from the 7 rules is that the State Departments of Agriculture have recognized it is our responsibility to bring about some common sense as these regulations are put into place and as they hit the farm level. We are the line in the sand between the regulatory overreach from Washington and my neighbors who are producing the food that I'm going to feed to my children and eventually my grandchildren. So we must recognize that responsibility. There is hope on this one, but without the State Departments engaging and without the level that we have, I don't think we would see the FDA coming out to say we recognize that we need to have a spirit of cooperation, not just regulation. We have worked with them and to ensure that this not just an unfunded mandate, that's not just passed only to a State Department of Agriculture, but then later passed to a farmer, that these new levels of regulations require so much more than what they've been used to as we train them in good agricultural practices or good handling practices for a processing arm of a farm production. So there are a host of ways that the State Departments of Agriculture will have to stand in the gap on behalf of the production agriculture across this country that is quite the efficient machine that the Americans have enjoyed for so many years. Without our doing that, with just leaving it to the folks inside the Beltway, we would be irresponsible in our duties as state elected, in my case, or appointed commissioners, secretaries, or directors of agriculture. So we take our responsibility seriously. Food Safety and Modernization Act can work. It is the law of the land, and it is our responsibilities to ensure that there's consistency and overreach is not going to be a burden for our farmers. Thank you.
Thank you, Hugh. This is Dr. Strain again, commissioner from Louisiana. It is the ultimate goal of the ag commissioners, directors, and secretaries across the United States that ag regulation starts in the states. One time there was a president, I think it was Eisenhower, said it's mighty easy to fall when you substitute a pencil for a plow and you're 1,000 miles away from the cornfield. And we believe that, you know, we are best served with regulations in our particular states that reflect the different needs and the different terrains and the different opportunities. When you look at our overall goals, you know, we are there both to promote and to regulate agriculture, forestry, and aquaculture and energy so that this nation will continue to produce a safe and affordable supply of food, fuel, and fiber, and have the tools that our farmers need and our businesses need to access markets, conserve the environment. So you have been listening to our position today on the issues of federal overreach and also the reasons why that we are in opposition to federal overreach, and that also of our mission to continue to increase so that we will have that available and safe food supply. So with that, I'm going to close this section and then ask you to, we will start a question and answer period.